Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay on Wednesday, May the 29th. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast. And our top story today is that a sitting-born teacher who had a cocaine addiction and posted about his drug use on socials has been banned from the profession. Lucy joins me now with more on this story.
Well, Austin Whiting was the head of Year 13 at Borden Grammar School and taught geography. The 46-year-old joined the school in 2004 but resigned last March. A misconduct panel heard he also had an inappropriate conversation with a pupil while working his notice period.
So how did his drug use come to light?
Well, concerns were raised about posts on Snapchat that had been seen by some current students. They included how he planned to write a book called The Man Who Sniffed a House Up His Nose. He admitted to using cocaine between March and May last year, but denied allegations he'd taken it on the school site or had it in his car. A report said that while the Snapchat posts weren't encouraging drug use, they had the potential to bring the school into disrepute.
And what did the panel say?
They noted Mr. Whiting had acted in a way that fell far short of what was expected by teachers who were to be considered as role models. They also heard from colleagues who confirmed he'd been a good teacher for more than 17 years. However, they decided a ban was appropriate and proportionate. The ban can be reviewed after 2 years.
Lucy, thank you ever so much. Borden Grammar School has been approached for a comment.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories for you today, and two people have been jailed after beating a vulnerable man with a baseball bat and setting fire to his flat in Canterbury. 35-year-old Will Crump targeted his neighbour in Frensham Close, knowing that he'd received his benefits money. The victim was left in a smoke-filled room before being found and taken to hospital. Lawrence Cole, who's 35 and from the Avenue in Hurst, was also part of the attack. The men have been locked up for a total of 4 years. A man's been arrested on suspicion of drink driving after a police car crashed near Sittingbourne while responding to an urgent call. It was involved in a collision with a white Ford Focus on the A2 London Road in Tenham early on Sunday. A 39-year-old local man who was driving the Focus was arrested and bailed pending further investigation. A Minster man has been ordered to pay back just £1 after 10 kilos of cocaine was found in a banana shipment at Sheerness Docks. Sean Burke is thought to have received almost £100,000 for his role in the scheme, which earned him 7.5 years in prison. The 35-year-old was said to have no assets, and so the judge made the nominal £1 order. Now, as election campaigning continues, Nigel Farage has been in Dover to announce the town's reform candidate. Fair Fuel UK founder Howard Cox will represent the party on July the 4th. And Mr. Farage used his speech to criticise the government's Rwanda policy.
I am absolutely convinced that the overriding reason for calling a snap early general election is because he knows those planes in July, as he promised, would not be going to Rwanda. They weren't going to go. Rishi can't stop the boats. And he can't stop the boats for the very same reason that the first aeroplane that was on the tarmac and ready to go was stopped, if you remember, by a judgment from a single so-called judge. I say so-called because most of the judges in the European Court of Human Rights haven't actually been legally trained. They're jurists, which is a very odd European concept, at least to us. And he knows that it won't happen. He knows that despite everything that they put in the legislation which disapplies Articles 2 and 3 of the Human Rights Act 1998, he knows that an international treaty goes over above and beyond that. And planes not going to Rwanda would see the failure of what he believes to be his flagship policy. And that's where the other R comes in. That's where the reform vote, he feared, would have gone a lot higher. So I genuinely believe that's the reason why we've got this early general election.
Well, our colleagues from KMTV have been out and about finding out what voters in Dover want from the next government.
Who do you think you'll be voting for in the election?
Without enthusiasm, I'll be voting Labour. I hope they can improve things. Things are very bad. I hope they can at least make things a little better. There's a part of me which wants to vote for Count Binface and his slogan, "It's time to put out the trash."
What do you want changed in Dover?
The first thing is to recognise how deep the hole we're in, And it would just be good if we could get the NHS working again properly, if we could get the schools working again properly.
Do you feel, I mean, I've been speaking to a couple of people today, the thing people raise a lot is the channel crossings.
It just seems to be something that we're supposed to care about, when actually I care far more about the NHS or simply about normal everyday matters.
I don't know if anybody is going to be able to make our lives any better. At the moment, I mean, if Labour get in, they've got to clear up the mess that the Tories have got. I mean, people in Dover, the place is full of food banks, people are suffering, you know, it's the economy, and there are people that are homeless, you know, on the streets. The rents are astronomic, and we need to get rid of these zero-hour contracts.
I'm going to vote for Labour.
Why is it you're voting Labour?
Well, I've been a lifelong supporter of Labour, and I'm very disappointed in the way the Tories have managed the economy in the past 12 years plus.
What do you want changed in Dover, as you'll also be electing an MP?
Well, a lot of things, really. I want the numbers of people coming across the channel to go down drastically, whatever needs to be done. And I want something done about the traffic, which we seem to have all the time now.
Yeah. Do you know who you'll be voting for in the general election?
Yes, I do.
Do you mind saying who?
Conservative. I just couldn't vote Labour. Conservative have got a lot to answer for, but I will stick with them at the moment.
Quite a few Conservative MPs have stood down, and quite a lot of people seem to be losing faith in the party, but you're sort of still sticking with them.
Yes, I'm not happy with what they're doing, but, I just think that they would be able to do more for us, I would think, when they get sorted out. I haven't read much about the reform, so I might do a little bit of homework on that.
I've always been concerned over Labour's economic policies, because financially, to me, they've been inept over the last few years. But then again, you've got Conservatives who are in a complete mess. Overall, we need to be looking at everything from welfare state. I'm a school governor, and one of the things that really annoys me is all the governments treat education as a soft touch of drawing money out. They should consider it as an investment. After all, those, the up-and-coming children, students and so on, are going to be paying for all everything in the future, everything that we do. So to actually use this as a soft touch to keep money back, they're underfunded. All schools are underfunded. I mean, that some of the buildings are falling down. And one of our problems with the governments as well is our basic country infrastructure is falling to pieces. And it costs more to put it right retrospectively than do it as a continual basis. And that's another thing, you know, potholes. You see how many... I've got four new wheels on my car because of the damage from potholes.
Today, Labour leader Keir Starmer is promising to cut NHS waiting lists from day one if Labour wins the general election. Rishi Sunak will be looking to appeal to younger voters with his promise to create 100,000 apprenticeships a year. And the Liberal Democrats are due to set out a rescue plan for farmers. Now, it wants to see £1 billion in extra funding for the agriculture budget and to address worker shortages. We've been speaking to James Smith, who runs a fruit farm near Maidstone.
Our availability of labour has been greatly limited since we left the EU. And even though the government have extended the seasonal agricultural workers scheme, it really doesn't go very far. It's not particularly fit for purpose and doesn't meet the needs of horticulture. There's a small number of people that are visas available for poultry as well, as in for the poultry industry, but it's nowhere near the numbers that the industry requires and that we used to have access to when we had freedom of movement of people within the European Union. So but for fruit growing, nearly all of the harvest work is done by hand, and it's essential that we can harvest crops at the right time when the quality is perfect in order to meet the needs of the customers, whichever customers they might be. So that, as well as the government's insistence on the UK becoming a high skills, high wage economy, they're actively driving up the cost of labour, but whilst actively keeping the cost of food down or attempting to, you know, promote cheap food. You need the energy issue being addressed, genuine support on the ground. I also think that we need to have access to labour, as in seasonal workers. My absolute preference would be that we have freedom of movement for people. I mean, I think there's tends to be this complete confusion between, you know, seasonal workers, people moving between countries to work and contribute, versus illegal immigration. And so we see our access to labour as tied up with an immigration issue, which, and they're separate, completely separate things. So I'd love to just see some political foresight that actually sees through some of these issues. Stop sort of beating the drum of we're going to deal with migration and then use an easy thing like migrant labour for all different industries in the UK.
And the Conservatives have chosen their election candidate for Chatham and Aylesford after Tracy Crouch announced she's standing down. Nathan Gamester will be hoping to retain the seat for the Tories in July's vote. He's currently managing director at the Centre for Social Justice Foundation, which works with charities.
Kent Online reports.
A Kent dad has said he was horrified after his daughter dug up a blade in a sandpit along Dover seafront. The 11-year-old found the razor-sharp blade, which is feared to have been maliciously buried in the play area at Granville Sands. It's been reported to police and the council, who are searching CCTV footage to find those responsible. Council bosses in Swale have apologised to thousands of residents who are having issues with their bin collections. A new contractor took over the service 2 months ago and delays have been so bad some people have paid private companies to take away their rubbish. The local authority say the level of inconvenience is greater than expected and making improvements is their top priority. Drivers by the Kent coast say they'll stop using a car park in Walmer if local bosses introduce parking charges. Borough Pit car park is currently free, but the council will consider bringing in fees later this year as part of their parking strategy. Those who use it now say charges will only drive visitors away and block up local streets. Now, the Kent Online podcast has been hearing from a Kent dog welfare charity about some of the cruel techniques owners are using to get their dogs to behave. A study from the Dogs Trust shows people are pinning their dogs to the ground and growling, pinching their ears or rolling them onto their backs. It comes as data shows some of the most common behavioural complaints are barking and reactions to other people and their pets. Well, Kate has been speaking to Maria Murray from the Trust, who explained some of the most common reasons dog owners reach out for help.
With most behaviour issues, there will be dogs will have genetic dispositions for certain behaviours, and that could be their genetics, you know, parentage, and some breed traits as well. But on the whole, we encourage people to try and prevent problems from happening in the first place. So with separation anxiety, for example, the most common reason we will see a dog have separation anxiety is because an owner hasn't built time up away from their dog slowly over time in a way they're comfortable with, really from the day they get the dog home. So a lot of people will take an extended period of time off with their new puppy, for example, and then suddenly go back to work full time. And that's something that a dog can't cope with. Or as we saw during the pandemic, lots of people getting dogs. We were at home all the time for the first couple of years, even of their life. And then suddenly we've gone to leaving them. So most of the time we see it is something that could be prevented in the first place. But certainly in the case of separation anxiety, can be incredibly difficult to overcome once that behaviour's in place.
I read in the press release as well, some people are resorting to sort of, it seemed really cruel, quite drastic measures to try and get this behaviour under control themselves before they reach out. Can you talk me through some of those things that people are trying at home?
Yeah, you know, I really feel for people that are having a behaviour problem with their dog. The main issue is that most people will go to Google, right, to try and find some support. And there's just a plethora of information. So people really don't know the right path to take. And actually, people aren't instinctively dog behaviours or trainers. So often people will take advice or they've watched TV programmes where there's these instant fixes. And when I say that, we talk about something called the dominance theory. And that's something that some very infamous trainers that are out on the TV and out in the media use. And that's doing things like rolling their dogs onto their backs, pinning them down, squeezing their ears to kind of imitate biting from other dogs. But actually what we know is we call that punishment, and actually dogs that receive punishment, it can just make problem behaviours worse in the long term. So we encourage owners to always use positive reinforcement. So that's really positive stuff when a dog does something we want them to do, and encourage more of that behaviour. To be honest, in the case where you've got something like separation anxiety or reactivity with other dogs, you really do want to be speaking to a qualified behaviorist. You're going to struggle to find any information on the internet, for example, that's going to help you, because the most important thing is we understand why the dog is exhibiting those behaviors, and that can be different in every dog. So we need to get that bit first, and then we can help establish, right, these are the ways that you can go about helping that dog with that issue. And that's why the behaviour support line is so amazing, because it's this free resource where people can get really, they know they're getting the best advice that's out there.
You touched on it a little bit there. If you do use the dominance theory and sort of negative reinforcement to try and get the behaviour under control, it can lead to worse behavioural problems. Can it also trigger other behavioural issues that weren't present in the first place?
Absolutely, because all you're doing is you're actually asking a dog to suppress its feelings and how it feels. And what that can do is just escalate it. So a dog in the first instance, for example, another issue that we see a lot is resource guarding. So that's where a dog loves its toys or its treats and doesn't want to give them up. And actually, we say that's okay. A dog doesn't have to give that thing up for you. And we teach people to swap. So we give them something even more valuable that they'll give that thing up for me. But what a lot of people do will pin their dogs, forcibly take that thing off the dog. So actually what that encourages is the next time someone tries to take something really nice away from that dog is, actually, I'm going to escalate the behavior. So I might nip you, I might bite you. And so it's really important that we don't kind of push our dogs any more than, when they're showing worried behavior already.
Maria is also encouraging dog owners in Kent to take part in the National Dog Survey so they can get a snapshot of behavior in the county.
Kent Online reports.
Plans to build almost 300 homes in Tenham have been pushed back due to concerns over a lack of doctor's services. The Frognall Lane development, which included 298 homes, sports pitches and a community allotment, have already received planning permission in principle. But councillors fear residents wouldn't have access to a GP, as there are currently none in the village. There are plans to knock down a former secondary school in Chatham to make way for nearly 140 new homes. St John Fisher Catholic Comprehensive went on the market last year after pupils moved to a new building on City Way. Developers have put in an application for 77 houses and 62 apartments. A sinkhole's opened up on a road in Canterbury for the third time in a month. Part of St Peter's Street in the city centre has been closed since last Friday morning. The same area was shut for 4 days at the beginning of May, just days after reopening following 3 weeks of work. Southern Water say they're investigating. There'll be closures on the A249 tonight, so work can continue on the multi-million pound junction improvement scheme. It'll be shut northbound between the Stockbury roundabout and the Quay Street roundabout between 8pm and 5am tomorrow. And Rag and Bone Man's been on our sister radio station KMFM to tell us about his new single. What Do You Believe In is from his upcoming album, and he says it's got a different vibe from his previous work. He was on Breakfast with Gary and Chelsea.
Tell us about the new song. And the new album as well. It's kind of different vibes. You've been talking about, you know, family time and stuff, and I believe it's more about that, but you tell us.
Oh, it's meant to be... I went into this album process with a very clear motivation to make something that made people feel good, and I wanted it to be hopeful. I wanted it to be all about love and about just... I just wanted to uplift people, really. And for me, as an artist, it's quite easy to go for those A minor chords all the time and do something that's quite sad or whatever. That feels like a very comfortable place. And I was like, I'm thinking about the way I feel on stage and how I want to portray my music to people and how I feel currently in my life. And I need the album to be a representation of who I am right now. And who I am right now is very happy and positive about life. So I feel like the record and this single particularly, that's it perfectly represents how I feel and who I am as a person right now.
Yeah, absolutely. With like being at home and that kind of stuff, and these songs being about your family life as well as, you know, your internal life and everything else. Do you then have a bit of, do you run the songs by the family? Do you sort of see how they respond to it, if it's more about them and life with them? Or do they just, you know, chip in with a bit of a review, what they like, what they don't like? And if so, does that have any effect on you?
I mean, I usually play the songs to my missus because a lot of them are about her, and she likes that. She knows she's my muse, and like she's you know, she's always like, is this this is a happy one, right? And I'm like, yeah. I mean, and like I do play my songs to my kids. My little ones are only 6 and 7. So they're really like, they'll take on board the sound of a song rather than the lyrics. But most of the time their attention span is like 30 seconds. And if they're not really loving it, then they'll just walk away.
Kent Online Sports.
Football and Gillingham have launched a commemorative away kit to mark the 25th anniversary of a famous victory at Wembley. They've recreated the yellow strip worn by players in their 3-2 Division 2 playoff final over Wigan in 2000. It was their first time in Division 1, which is now the Championship. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok and Threads. Plus, you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, you just need to head to kentonline.co.uk.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. It's nearly time for fun at Cossington Park Sports Centre. The family-friendly, inclusive pool and sports centre for Medway. Opening on Wednesday the 17th of July. With a brand new fun pool, wave machine and flume. Four-lane swimming pool and splash pool for little ones. Multi-purpose dance and fitness studio with children's party area. And a state-of-the-art gym. The countdown is on. Sign up to a membership and find out more at medway.gov.uk/Cossington Park.